It is a new public phase of the impeachment inquiry into President Trump, and we're getting up to speed here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The House committees leading the impeachment inquiry released the first transcripts yesterday of closed-door depositions into President Trump's dealings with Ukraine. So have you been paying attention to the testimony happening on Capitol Hill? What questions do you have about what we've learned so far? Do you support the House voting to formalize the inquiry? We're at 800-642-1234. Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science and teaches American government and gender studies at the UW Superior, and she joins us from our studios in Superior. Elisa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me again.
So last week, the impeachment inquiry passed this milestone with the first formal vote on the floor of the House of Representatives, 232 to 196. Resolution passes. What does formalizing this inquiry mean?
It means basically that the Democrats have established a process, a very clearly laid out process and plan for how this inquiry or investigation up to leading to impeachment will proceed. And so it lays out how, you know, Democrats and Republicans have equal questioning time in closed door meetings, how they are able to request subpoenas and witnesses, and basically just lay out the basic parameters of how this inquiry or investigation by the House Intelligence Committee is going to proceed.
Okay, so there was already this inquiry happening before this vote. People were testifying almost daily. So what does the vote change as we head into this public phase?
Well, so the vote was, I guess it wasn't necessarily a legal process or legal measure that they had to go through. The House can engage in this inquiry at any stage without formalizing through a vote. The Democrats held this vote largely in reaction to a lot of the negative press that they were receiving about the secrecy of the closed door meetings that were occurring, of the president's absence of due process rights. And so I think a lot of the claims that were being leveled against them in this inquiry process, they wanted to establish a very clear, you know, upfront, out, you know, process and made it for the first time for public. And so what we've seen again this yesterday, and we'll see more today, are the first of the transcripts from some of these closed door meetings. And so we're moving also from a largely closed door phase of the investigation to a more public, open part of the investigation.
And when you look at process, Elisa, the inquiry now gives the president's attorneys the ability to cross-examine witnesses. Have we seen this before in impeachment proceedings?
Well, it's, so there's been very few impeachments of the president. There's only been two U.S. presidents who have been impeached by the House. And because the Constitution is fairly, I would say, vague, or they, you know, there's not very clear parameters in terms of the process of the House, the process of the Senate. And so largely the House is free to conduct the inquiry as well as, you know, the impeachment as they deem fit. And so it's not necessarily something new, but it's also, you know, it's not necessarily a problem that if it's something new as well, because each impeachment seems to be slightly different from the last.
We're getting up to speed on the impeachment inquiry with Wisconsin political scientist Elisa von Hagel as our guide. You can join in. Have you been able to keep up with the practically daily testimonies? Do you support the House voting to formalize this inquiry? Do you think it should have happened sooner or not at all? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So yesterday, four White House officials declined to appear before House committees in these closed-door testimony. But what have the witnesses said about why they aren't testifying?
Well, some of them have not stated anything. They've just not shown. Many of them are speaking through their lawyer. So it depends. Each of these witnesses are different. We have John Bolton, the former NSC advisor. He has been summoned by the House, but he said he would not testify unless subpoenaed, unless forced to be there. We have Eisenberg, who was supposed to testify
John
yesterday.
John Eisenberg.
Yeah, uh-huh. John Eisenberg, excuse me, was supposed to testify yesterday, a top NSC lawyer. He did not appear, and his lawyer stated that there's, you know, the president declared absolute immunity over the Trump's his closest advisors, and thus determined that they are not to testify before Congress. And so many of these individuals are stuck between the, you know, executive branch saying that you are not to testify, whereas Congress is asking them to testify. And so there are a handful of individuals through their lawyers are filing a lawsuit to have the federal courts tell them, what do they do? Which branch supersedes the other? And so it's very chaotic at times, it seems, but it's every individual is different in terms of how they're dealing with their summons or subpoena to testify.
Let's bring in Patrick now in Richland County. Hi, Patrick. What's on your mind here?
Well, good morning and great show, ladies. What's on my mind this morning is the rule of law. And I was just wondering if the guest thought that the rule of law was under attack. And one other kind of a rhetorical question. I know for myself, I recognize and appreciate now the institutions of democracy before 45 came along. But the rule of law, is it under attack? Thank you.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Elisa, how would you address that in terms of what is under attack here?
Well, with respect to the impeachment proceedings, there have been assertions that, this is a violation of due process, is a violation of rights of, and it has been going about in an improper manner. But again, because of the way that the Constitution lays out the impeachment process, the House has been very upfront and very clear in terms of why and how they're proceeding forward, and they are working strictly within the bounds of the Constitution.
Yesterday, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff told the press this would be used as further evidence of obstruction of justice with not having these White House officials appear to testify. So does refusing to comply with subpoenas, does it hurt the president's case here?
Well, that's hard to say. And so in terms of the, you know, strict letter of the law, obstruction of justice by refusing to testify under a subpoena would constitute a obstruction of justice in this matter. Whether or not that would hurt the president in the court of public opinion or even amongst senators who will perhaps, if the House votes to impeach, would be deciding his fate or his removal from office. And so there's many different sort of ways of thinking about how that affects the president. And so, again, while it's, again, Biden is strictly within the rule of law and would very much match what the Constitution would outlined, intended that impeachment was to deal with, whether or not that actually hurts the president is yet to be seen.
Remains to be seen. Yeah. And Schiff has said that these obstacles are, quote, not going to delay our work. He said he's suggesting White House officials, you know, they're going to the work of the committees are going to carry on regardless of whether, you know, these people show up to testify or not. We're talking with UW Superior political scientist Elisa von Hagel about the impeachment inquiry as it enters a new public phase. You can join in with questions. Do you have about the inquiry? Are you concerned that the White House, the House vote was partisan? Will you watch televised testimony to come? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this conversation in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are getting an update on the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. As House investigators yesterday released the first transcripts of closed-door depositions, we've seen now four White House officials defy subpoenas to testify. So what is your take on White House officials refusing to comply with subpoenas? Have you been paying attention to the testimony so far? What are your thoughts? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Elisa Von Hagel is our guide. She's an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. Let's go back to the phones now. Keith is joining us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Keith.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering about this whistleblower had heard this secondhand. So I thought there was a protocol to follow. They changed that in August, I guess, and it made it easier for anybody to come forward now, I guess. I have a problem with that, and it's just the coordination between the whistleblower and Adam Schiff with in regards to setting this all up with attorneys and everything. And secondly, I understand some of these people that are being subpoenaed or called to the White House aren't always allowed to have representative attorney there to represent them too. So it's kind of, I can understand why somebody wouldn't go under questioning if they couldn't have somebody there, an attorney or representative, for questioning.
Yeah, Keith, thanks so much. Two-part question there, Elisa. First, the whistleblower, this unidentified CIA officer who filed a complaint alleging misconduct during the president's July phone call. What do we know about the whistleblower at this point?
For some people, it seems maddeningly very little. We still are unaware of who the person's identity is. We do know that there are two whistleblowers that have come forward from the White House who work within the White House and who have reported seeing this transcript of the phone call through, again, as you mentioned, the transcript, not hearing it firsthand, being on the line, but seeing the transcript. And they are completely anonymous. It's at this point, it seems to be the fact that members of Congress do not know who this person is, and it is very clear that this person has representation to ensure their anonymity, their protection, given the very real threats that they've received already against their life.
And then the other aspect, Keith, is asking about rank-and-file employees, advisors, and assistants being called to testify. They are also seeking counsel. So how does that work?
Well, while we talk about impeachment in the terminology that we use for perhaps, say, criminal crimes or crimes that are tried in a court of law, this is not a criminal trial; it's an impeachment trial. And so it's legal in the sense that there's a process outlined in the Constitution, but this isn't a criminal legal process. And so these individuals are not being subpoenaed to testify. It doesn't necessarily hold the same weight as it would in a criminal court. And so some of the basic general protections or established protocols that we have for criminal prosecutions don't hold or don't carry aren't present in this impeachment process, just given the nature of the impeachment process itself.
We're getting up to speed on the impeachment inquiry with political scientist Elisa Von Hagel as our guide. What questions do you have about the impeachment inquiry process? Join in 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kayla now in Madison with thoughts on this. Hi, Kayla.
Hi there. I have two questions about kind of the process and then the aftermath. My first question is, how long is this expected to take? And then the second part is, we have an election coming up, so if this impeachment goes through, what happens for conservatives? Do they have to, is Pence their candidate? Do we, pick another one?
Kayla, thank you so much for those questions. Really specifically here about the timeline on this, Elisa, what is the timeline?
Oh, I wish I knew. So it does seem to appear that the Democrats are moving fairly swiftly through this inquiry phase. And so it's anticipated. Again, there's no exact timeline that they have to follow. when Bill Clinton was impeached, the Ken Starr investigation took over 2 years to, you know, occur. And so they're not going to take 2 years, hopefully. But I think there's been talk of having an impeachment vote in the House by the end of November and then moving to a Senate trial, if not in the end, towards the end of December, if the started the beginning of January. And so it looks like they are wanting to move fairly quickly through these phases of the impeachment vote and thus then moving to the Senate for the trial. With respect to the second question, mm-hmm. when it comes to the election, this is occurring within election season, and if the president is acquitted, the president is free to run for office and to maintain his office as long as he sees fit within this 2-term parameters. If he is removed from office by the Senate, then he is not eligible to run for this next election cycle. And whether or not conservatives have determined or found a replacement candidates is yet to be seen at this point anyway. There's no discussion or public discussion of it as of yet.
So going back to the testimony here, the biggest name on the House committee's list perhaps this week is former National Security Advisor John Bolton, scheduled to testify Thursday. What might he be able to provide the committee about the Ukraine phone call or military aid?
Well, I think John Bolton is I wouldn't say loose cannon, but it's a little unclear as to what necessarily he would provide. He left the White House in sort of awkward terms. He was very much opposed to the president in certain foreign policy matters. And what we do know thus far is that Bolton was opposed to the president's or the use of the president's personal lawyer, Giuliani, specifically. And his Giuliani's involvement in Ukraine in dealing with, certain business issues, as well as dealing with this foreign aid issue that obviously has prompted the impeachment inquiry in the first place. And so he was opposed to Giuliani's involvement and saw it as problematic. As to what, he can add to the conversation, it's still unclear as, what details he can fill in or what gaps he can fill.
Let's bring in Chad now in Galena, Illinois. Hi, Chad.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Earlier, you stated that this isn't technically a criminal case. And in a criminal case, when someone's subpoenaed, there are consequences for not responding. What are the consequences for not responding to a subpoena in this type of case?
Alisa?
Well, yeah. So it goes to court. It goes to the federal courts, and so the problem is with that is, of course, that it has to go through the court system, which is a process. It's a lengthy process, and so it simply is something that takes time. There are the two advisors within the White House that have been subpoenaed. They have filed suit with the federal court, asking them to weigh in and say which supersedes the other branch, Congress or the president. And I think the hearings stated or are stated to begin in December 10th. So, again, that's sort of the only arbiter as of right now we have. And that is the determining factor in terms of whether or not these individuals, are held to this subpoena or are, again, the president supersedes that request by the House.
Alisa, Republicans in Congress have called the impeachment inquiry a sham. The president has called it a witch hunt. What are they getting at by criticizing this process?
Well, it's very clearly following the exact parameters that are laid out in the Constitution. They are following pretty much the rules established by the Republican Congress in 2015. So it's clear, at least it seems to be the fact that by challenging the process, they're not discussing the actual content or the issue at hand. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of Republicans defending the president's actions in this particular case. But what they are challenging or what they are trying to fight against is the process itself. And so even after we had the vote on Thursday, which laid out the process quite clearly, we still see these same challenges of process, rather than actually starting to grapple with what it means to have the president you know, basically using foreign aid for, as a means to incur foreign personal favors from other foreign dignitaries.
Lots to keep your eye on here. What are you watching for most closely as a political scientist?
Oh, everything. Absolutely. I mean, every day is, I think there was someone who mentioned it, but every day there's just so much that comes out, and it's hard to sift through and find those kernels of, you know, of value or information. But what I think is very interesting is to see the shift in public opinion that's occurred and to watch how that proceeds. We see the majority of Americans did not support impeachment. Now they do. Whether that holds, that's the question I think that will be on everyone's mind.
Alisa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Alisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior, and she's been giving us an update on the impeachment inquiry and the latest on Capitol Hill. She joined us from our studios in Superior. Coming up, we check in on the state of public transportation around Wisconsin with two advocates. What does public transportation look like in your community? Is there enough? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll talk transportation after this news update here on the Ideas Network.